And that's because we have different backgrounds. We come from those different backgrounds. We look at things differently. We see things differently. So sometimes those things are going to cause some problems within us. So the church is no exception. It was not an exception to that rule back then when it was first beginning, and it's certainly not an exception to it today. We certainly have problems within the church because the church is made up of people. See? And so we're going to have times where there's going to be conflicts. Okay? One of the things that we have to understand about it is that the presence of conflicts and problems in a relationship, when you're talking about a marriage or you're talking about, you know, an organization, a church or whatever it is, the presence of problems in that does not indicate that it's a bad situation, okay? It's not the presence of problems, it's how you deal with those, you see, or whether you deal with them or not, you see. That's what becomes really problematic in the whole thing. So we need to understand that even in the church today, we're going to have problems. Okay, but the fact that we have problems doesn't mean that, you know, we're a bad, you know, bad group of people. It just means that we're normal. The question is, how do we deal with those problems that come up from time to time? See, do we deal with them in healthy ways that help the congregation to continue growing and building and so forth, or do we deal with them in destructive ways that will eventually tear the church apart? See, and I would like to think that we look around and, you know, people say, well, we don't have any problems here. Well, you know, we don't have any real big, you know, things that are kind of hanging over our heads or whatever. We're very blessed that way. And I think it's because of the nature of the people that we have here. But we do have problems from time to time that come up. But I'd like to think that we deal with them in some very healthy ways that allow us to move on and grow stronger because of those things. So we look at, the presence of conflicts and problems in the church. And we look back here at the church as its first beginning. They've got a problem. What's the nature of the problem they have? I'm sorry? Okay. Actually, it's the Grecian widows are not being taken care of. They're the ones who are being neglected. And so they come and they're complaining about this. Okay, hey, we're kind of being sidelined over here. Our widows aren't being taken care of the way they need to be. So what needs to be done about it? Now, when we look at this situation with Stephen, look at the statement that's there in the center of the first page there, of the cover page here. Where does opposition come from that we face oftentimes, even in the church? Okay, it comes from within and from without. In this case, it's from within, isn't it? Okay, and we look at Stephen in this statement that he makes in the second paragraph there. He served and even died so that the pressures from within and without would not distract the church from its mission. And, you know, if you think about it, shouldn't that really be our goal as members of, you know, the body, that whatever is going on, whatever problems, whatever opposition that we are going to face, either individually or as a body, that we should be determined that we're not going to let this problem distract us from what the mission of the church is. And the mission of the church is spread the gospel and save souls. And so we need to make sure that we have that same kind of determination. And that's really what the focus of this lesson is about, is looking at, okay, how did Stephen handle these things? What was his involvement in helping the church to keep focus on the mission that it had? Because if we recognize that just as they did back then, the church is going to have problems, then what can we, all of us as individual members, do to help the church continue focusing on its mission and not get distracted by whatever whatever goes on, okay? So, our text is taken from Acts 6 and 7. How many of you read ahead of time on that? All right, a few of you did. Good job, okay. All right, look at explain it and express it on the inside there. First thing that Stephen did, we're looking at what did he do here to help, you know, keep the focus on the mission here. Acts chapter 6, 1 through 7. At this particular point in the early part of the church, how fast was it growing?
Fast.
Okay. It's growing very rapidly. And by the way, sometimes, you know, I think that the most of the text from this particular lesson are taken from the NIV text. So sometimes if you're reading a different translation, then, you know, the words may not match. Barbara found that out. She was asking me about that very thing, you know, earlier, because I don't know, what does the King James Version read in verse 7 there, by the way? Who's got the King James there? Okay, all right. Okay. So, you know, we just kind of be aware of that. But what we're looking at a rapid or a great number of people being added to the Lord's church, including in this particular verse, what group of people does it tell us are also being converted? Some of the priests, okay? Some of the priests are accepting the gospel message and being converted to Christ. So we're seeing this growth that is taking place here, and this growth, though, is in the midst of this controversy or this problem that's there, okay? What's the nature of the problem? We said, well, the Grecian widows aren't being looked after the way that they should be. They're being neglected in the daily distribution of the food. What is that all about? Does anybody, you know what they're talking about here? I don't want us to assume, you know, we read the words, but what's the situation really going on here?
I think it applied to widows that had no family to take care of themselves.
Yeah.
So the church would step in.
Exactly. There's responsibility. You know, we've got women who are widowed, and they don't have somebody look after them to take care of their daily needs on a regular basis, and so the church was accepting that responsibility. But apparently there were those of the Greeks, you see, the non-Jews, the non-Jewish converts, they were being neglected, you see, in this distribution of food and so forth. They weren't being taken care of. The Jewish folks were being taken care of. The church in Jerusalem is made up at this point primarily of who?
Jews.
Mostly Jews, okay? But you still have some. You know, some who are not of Jewish, I mean, of Jewish descent. So there's this neglect that's going on here. So that's the nature of the problem, right? Okay. Now, what's the solution that they come up with?
Appoint deacons.
Okay. Appoint deacons. They don't call them deacons. But the word diakonos means servant. Okay, that's the word for deacon in the New Testament, in the Greek. And so basically that's what they were, and people will, again, one of the problems in the church, right? People will argue back and forth, no, they really weren't deacons. Well, yes, they were technically, because they were appointed to be servants for a special task, and that's what deacons do. So we have these, and again, you know, a lot of folks just generally look at this as being the appointment of the first deacons in the church. You know, the point is they had a need, they found a way to meet this need, and they took care of it. Okay. So, what was one of the concerns though in meeting this need?
The apostles' concern, I think, was that their mission was to go out and really spread the word of God.
Okay.
And I think, to me, when I read it, it showed that they had the knowledge to teach and further the word of God. They didn't have or couldn't waste energy on doing, you know, being personal servants. They needed that help. They needed that assistance in order for them to continue the mission of God.
Okay. All right. So you have the apostles, and their take on this is, and even the wording here, look at what he says here. It would not be right, this is in verse 2 here of chapter 6, it would not be right for us to neglect the ministry of the word of God in order to wait on tables. Sounds to me like, you know, are they stuck up? They too good to wait on tables? Is that the problem? Okay. Again, everybody has a certain job to do, right? And, you know, the principle here is, if you got somebody who's got this job, but they're doing this job instead, then what are they not doing? They're not doing their job, you see? And that oftentimes is a problem, you see? You know, even oftentimes today in the church, and we've got, you know, deacons, and we got teachers, and we got elders, and we got preachers, and, you know, if the deacons aren't, as one person said, the deacons don't deacon, the elders can't help, you see? You know, because then the elders end up doing deacons' work, and, you know, and it just, the work doesn't get done. And that's basically the situation that we have here. See, they're saying, okay, you know, we have this task that we've got to focus on the ministry of the word. And this is an important task that needs to be done. These widows need to be looked after. Okay? But that's not something that we need to be focusing our attention on. We've already got a responsibility here. Now, did they neglect their responsibility? Absolutely not. They came up with a solution, right? See? So they made sure that the need was being met. Right? In that way, another principle is involved in this, that what you're doing is you're involving more people in the work that needs to be done. You see? So it gives more people an opportunity to serve the Lord. Okay? And we really need to look at it in those kinds of ways. Go back, you know, looking at these these questions that are here. Why would it not have been proper for the apostles to serve in the daily ministration?
Their commission was given straight from Christ to go out in the world and teach. You know, it didn't. And that was their mission, and they needed to stand by this. This was a job given to them, and it was a full-time job.
Okay.
I mean, and so, therefore, they focused on that job that they were given.
Okay.
And they needed the assistance, so they didn't neglect it. They told them what they needed to do in order to accomplish all that other stuff, but yet still their focus was on the main, on the main job that was given to them.
Okay.
You know, he also taught, you'll always have the poor with you. And he stresses through most of your books not to neglect the poor. And sometimes we're busy taking care of those that we're around, but we don't go out and look at the poor who needs Christ as much as anybody, because they don't have a place to sleep sometimes. They don't have food, you know. They're poor and down, and, you know, Christ has changed their life by our example of trying to meet those needs of people who, when I say poor, I mean they don't have anything. They don't have food. They don't have a place to sleep a lot of times. And they're the ones that we too, that I think he meant to go out and find them and feed them. And while you're feeding them, you teach them.
Okay. Is there two different aspects of that work, though? Can we get really kind of hung up on going out and feeding the poor and taking care of them, and where then we're not paying attention to the teaching of the word?
I think you can use both of them.
For sure.
I think as you're feeding the poor, you can also be teaching right along with it. But this here also reminds me of the incident between Jesus, Peter, and John, when Jesus had a certain task for Peter to do, and he was jealous because he said, you know, John was to remain. And Jesus' answer was real quick. If I want him to stay, what is that to you? You need to do what I told you to do.
Right.
You know, and that tells me I need to focus the capability that Christ has given to me in order to further his kingdom. It doesn't matter whether it's just washing dishes. It doesn't matter if it is just to reach a helping hand out to a neighbor. This is the ability he has given to me, and I need to use this. And by using this, it doesn't obligate me not to have to teach the word, but it gives me, to me, it gives me a little extra something to help teach the word.
Okay.
And that's what I need to focus on.
Okay. All right. What would the apostles have had to forsake in order to serve tables?
Their mission.
Yeah, their job. You know, we need to make sure we understand something here. Again, you know, we're kind of talking about this idea of, okay, we got to go out and we got to take care of, you know, the poor and feed them and do, you know, whatever needs to be done. And we can teach them at the same time while we're doing that. That's true. Okay? So we need to be careful that those who are doing those things are not neglecting, and that's part of the major point here, that they're not neglecting the other tasks that they have to do in order to do that task. In other words, are there other people that can do some of those things that need to be done, you say, that spreads the work around so that those who are doing, you know, certain things that they're tasked to do can do what it is that they're tasked to do? You say, Pat?
Yeah, it seems to me then the thing is, if they were to do sort the table, they would have to take the time out to get a list, get the information, get it all wrote down, gather all the stuff. So a lot of theirs is done, not even serving the poor. Most of theirs is going to be just getting everything together. They're not accomplishing then what they set out to do.
And I think sometimes you find that problem within the church today. And I've seen this happen. You know, a lot of people will sit back and say, well, that's what we got the preacher for. That's what we got the elders for. No. Things to visit the sick and to help the poor and to do all these things. It's not just the preacher and the elders and the deacon's job. It's everybody's job.
You know, it's sometimes it can get overwhelming, and preachers today do oftentimes get overwhelmed, you know, in that all of the things that people expect a preacher to do, and it's like, you know, you only have but so many days in a week and hours in a day, and, you know, people have all these expectations, and then on top of all that, you better make sure that you hit a home run every time you get up to preach on Sunday mornings. They won't expect, you know, really great lessons. And they don't understand that it takes a lot of time to study and prepare and to put all that together and, you know, and so forth. And so we have to kind of, okay, what is it that we expect there? And not just the preachers, but the elders, you know, we want the elders to be out doing all these things and this and so forth. And, you know, again, the part of the thing is that we have to make sure we understand there's two things. Number one is there are different tasks for everybody to do. Okay? And so everybody needs to do their task. If everybody did their task, what they were supposed to be doing, then the work would get done a whole lot smoother, you see. But if we have deacons that are having to do elders' work because the elders aren't doing it, which oftentimes happens, you know, a lot of churches, and I've experienced this in places I've been where we had elders that weren't doing their elders' work, they were more administrators than they were anything else. You know, they're taking care of the finances and the checkbook and the, you know, all those kinds of things. And so they don't have opportunity and the time to be shepherds because they're too busy taking care of all this, you know, administrating everything that needs to be done in the church and making sure everybody's, you know, that's not their job. But they're not doing it, and so then we oftentimes have found deacons having to do what elders should do or preachers having to do what elders should be doing, you see, and the work doesn't get done the way that it should get done. And when that happens, then the church ends up suffering. The question that we have on here, middle of the page, what would have happened to the fast-growing church if the apostles had begun to serve tables? You see? Well, here's a problem that I think we have to look at and understand. Sometimes we look at growth in the wrong way. You see? And for a lot of folks and for a lot of churches, growth is translated merely by numbers. Okay? Is the church growing? You see? Well, how many people have we gained or lost, you know, over this particular period of time? And the growth can't always be determined by numbers. In fact, I'm convinced that it shouldn't. Numbers should not be the first, you know, criteria. That spiritual growth is the first criteria should be. You see, that we're looking at how is the church, because if it doesn't grow spiritually, you see, you can add all kinds of people numbers wise, but if they're not growing spiritually, then what are you doing?
You're just adding people.
Do what?
You're just adding people.
You see. And you're not necessarily even saving souls.
Exactly.
You see. So we need to understand that way. And that's why I think that the emphasis and the apostles are putting on this, you know, it's not right for us to neglect the ministry of the word, because that's the spiritual focus. You see. So that we take care of these physical needs when there are other people that can take care of those needs and make sure that that task gets done. So that we're taking care of both things. See, because oftentimes when somebody tries to do too much, something is going to end up getting neglected, isn't it? See, and so that's the important principle here in this part that we have to keep in mind, that we don't that the things that need to get done are not being neglected, but yet the work is being spread out, you know, by everyone. You've heard me say times before. And I'm convinced of this, that God did not set up within His church a non-participating membership. Okay? In other words, you know, you don't, like, it's not like a country club where, you know, you just, you know, pay your dues and, you know, you don't really have to do anything. You see? You know, the church designed by God is intended for everyone to do their part. Whatever that part is, you see, that there is a task for everyone to do, everyone to be involved in, you see, and everyone should be doing their part. Whatever that part is. Not everyone, by the way, can do every part. We've got to remember that also, you see. But everybody can do something. And that's what helps the church to continue to grow. When you look at this situation, this problem, the solution was what? Specifically, let's look at the solution here.
Pay that to responsibilities.
Okay, but specifically, what did they say? Choose out from among you seven men. I don't, you know. Why seven? People get into all kinds of discussions as to why, you know, but seven men is what apparently they felt was what they needed to take care of this at a time. Seven men.
Of good reputation.
Okay. Of good reputation. Full of the Spirit and of wisdom. Right? Okay. So, not just any seven men. Right?
That's right.
Not just any seven. Go find seven men. We need seven bodies to take care of this problem. Would that have done it?
No.
Why not?
It's like any business. You hire qualified people so that they can do the right, good job.
Okay.
And reach men. So you would want people that are qualified, and you just name the qualifications.
Okay.
That would know what to do when they go out.
Okay.
Spiritually.
So, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Okay.
Although they were picked to do this job, but in conjunction with doing this job, they still had a responsibility to represent Christ.
Right.
So you can't just pick anybody. It was a serious job. And, you know, that again goes back to, you know, a lot of people think they're inferior because they think whatever their abilities are is so little. No, it's not, because in whatever job you do, you still need to represent Christ, and that's a big job.
Exactly. So, you know, there's an important principle here in the aspect of that, again, everybody can do something, but not everybody can do
everything.
Not everybody's qualified to do everything, you see? And so, you know, the criteria that the disciples, the apostles came up with, and I'm convinced through the Holy Spirit, you know, they said, choose men who are full of the Spirit and wisdom. You see? They needed spiritually minded men to do this. Why? Why would that be so important?
That's your main purpose in teaching others. You'd have to have the knowledge of it to teach them.
Okay, you've got to teach others, but you know, if you're not spiritually focused, somebody mentioned earlier, you know, what's the chances of you really caring about these Grecian widows anyway? You know, they're not part of us. You know, am I really going to focus on my task the way I really need to? If I'm not spiritual, if I'm worldly focused, you see, then chances are I may not focus on it the way that I really need to and take care of it the way I need to. And then there's the wisdom part of it. You know, again, who are these guys dealing with? You see? You know, they're dealing with two different groups of people, you know, who, you know, haven't always looked favorably upon each other. Okay? And so does that require some wisdom here?
Yeah.
You see? And being able to, you know, handle things, you know, in a good way and so forth, so it doesn't create more problems, but yet it solves the problems that are there. You see? So these are important criteria that they lay out. So again, we have to keep in mind, you know, it's not a matter of just go find seven warm bodies, and so we got enough people. That's how many we think it'll take to handle this job. Go out and find seven people, and we'll give them this job to do, because then the task may not be done the way that it needs to be done.
I think when you go out to teach Christ, especially to different nations, you're not only just dealing with people from different nations, but people with different traditions, different ways of looking at things.
Absolutely.
So people got to have a little bit of wisdom of what they're dealing with and how to approach the people. You know, you can't go from nation to nation or country to country and just teach the way you were taught.
Right.
Because these people needed a totally different way of how you approach them.
Yeah, yeah. And it makes all the difference in the world if you don't take culture, you know, into consideration and things of that nature, you know, then absolutely it can cause more problems than it solves. Okay. Turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Get somebody to read verses. We're going to begin in verse 12 and get somebody to read down through verse 20. Rest my voice a little bit. Tom, go ahead.
For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and all have been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact, the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not of the body, it is therefore not of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not of the body, it is therefore not of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling? Now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body just as he pleased. If they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body.
Okay. Now, how many bodies?
One
body. How many parts?
Many.
Many. Parts is parts, right? They all go together to make up one body. Okay? in this particular part of what Paul is writing here, is really looking at the idea that one part of the body looks at another part and says, what? Oh, I'm not as important as they are. So therefore, I don't really count. See, that kind of an idea. Because I'm not the hand, then I'm not a very important part of the body. You see? Or because I'm not an eye, then I'm not really that important. You see? Do people do that in the church?
Yes.
Because I'm not this or because I'm not that, I'm not a preacher, I'm not an elder, I'm not a Bible class teacher, I'm this or that, I'm not important. You see? Let me ask you this question. How many of you in the congregation right now, how many of you know who our custodians are? Some of you do, some of you don't. Okay. But yet we come in every Sunday, and what do we expect?
Clean building.
Clean building. So if we come in, and there's dirt on the floor, or there's, you know, the pews haven't been cleaned up, you know, then, yeah, what, you know, how come they didn't clean the building this week? Yeah, exactly. And, you know, my point is just simply that, you know, sometimes we tend to categorize and we look at, you know, the preacher, well, you know, he's the guy, right? All right? And when we put him up there on the pedestal, you know, don't do that, okay? I'm no better than you are. I'm just a person. I've got a different job to do than you do. You see? I just have a different job to do, but I'm not any more important than anybody else is here. Okay? Now, my job may have... My job may have more responsibility, you see. That doesn't mean I'm more important than anybody else is. You see? I just have a different job to do. Right?
Yeah, I think Paul... in this letter explains it quite well on how important each member is. While we're one body, we all have a different job to do. And we need to respect that. You know, I think sometimes people on the, for lack of a better term, on the lower echelon seems to be less important. And that's not the way Paul is playing. We all have a job to do, and they're all important. They're just different, exactly. You know, different responsibilities.
Exactly. Everybody's job is important. And even, I can't think of his name right now, Brother Paul, his last name escapes me, but he was minister of the church in Centerville, Tennessee, for the first preacher they ever had there, and one of the neat things that he had a perspective on this, he said that even the church has grinners, okay? And the grinners are important. You know what a grinner is? What's a grinner? Do I?
Encourager.
Someone who brings other people to worship with them, and they sit there and grin, see, because they brought somebody, you see? And that's important, you see, that we all do what we can do. So you know, we need to understand and recognize the importance of whatever our position is. Now, the second part of this, let's read on here, beginning in verse 21, real quickly. The eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you, and the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. And the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has combined the members of the body and has given greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. So, you know, nobody gets to say to someone else, because you're not me, you're not important. You see, this Paul's want to make sure that we see this from both sides, doesn't he? You see, that individual people don't look at others who they determine are better than they and say, well, I don't really matter. You see? And what that does is, in their mind, it lets them off the hook. See, I'm not as important as the preacher or the elders, so I don't have to do anything wrong, okay? But the other side of the coin is, neither do those who, you know, have, you know, higher places, so to speak, you know, and I look at it as responsibility, you see, that they can't look at those below and say, oh, because you're not one of us, you're not as important. No. Everyone is important, you see. And if you don't think they are, then just stub your toe and feel how bad your head hurts. You see? You know, that little old toe out there, you know, and you'll feel it all the way through, won't you?
Amen.
You see? Because it's all connected. Like he says, if one part suffers, the whole body suffers. You see? And when one part rejoices, the whole body rejoices. You don't believe that? Just take a bite of some really great mint chocolate chip ice cream and see how it just flows through your whole body, and your body just goes, oh man, that's so good. See? You feel it throughout, don't you? Or whatever your favorite food is, you see? You know, your whole body benefits from that, doesn't it? And that's the way it should be in the church. You see? That's how we, all of us as individuals, should look at it in the church. You see? Nobody is better than anybody else. Nobody should be put on any pedestals. Nobody should be raised up higher than anyone else. Those that are in those higher positions just have more responsibility. You see? But we're not better than anybody else.
You see? You know,
and nobody else is lower than anybody else.
Sometimes I think we kind of have a tendency to hinder somebody else to step in and do a job because we get that feeling like it's not going to work unless I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of stepping back and give a chance and an opportunity to somebody else to maybe step in and do the job.
Yeah, let somebody else do things, you know, and get more people involved. That's my philosophy. I want to get as many of you involved in stuff as possible, you see. And part of the thing you do have to recognize is, you know what, when you're doing a lot of things, you know, you get other people to do some of those things. They may not do it the way that you're going to do it, but that's okay. Let them do it anyway, you see, as long as the job gets done. All right, we're out of time again.
Again.
Okay. Y'all just wouldn't talk so much. All right, we'll pick up here next week. We're going to try to finish this lesson next week. Notice the emphasis is on the word try, okay? All right, thank you all very much.
Yeah.